You're listening to Bible Prophecy Daily, a weekday podcast where Bible prophecy matters and matters greatly.
Welcome back to another episode of Bible Prophecy Daily. I'm your host, this go-around, Jake McCandless. And for my last couple episodes, I've been bringing you into another project I have going on, the Stand Firm Parents podcast. I've been doing it, so I'm in episode 25, something like that, but been doing it for quite a while. It's been just audio. I've just recently entered a partnership with LifeWord Media, recording out of their studio, and we're both sharing the content. And with that, have gone video. And so, but with Stand Firm Parents, what I am doing is working with families to have a faith that lasts, taking the things that you find on Bible Prophecy Daily, these matters of the end of the age, and thinking about, okay, how can we prepare our families for that? What can we be doing now? And so it weaves in between our first series that we did on the with the video podcast. We looked at parents as disciple makers. The next series, we looked at how the question of Israel impacts our children's faith. And so I wanted to share those episodes, or at least part of those episodes with you, about Israel and the next generation. And so I've shared two already with you. One, just me talking about how big of an issue this is, regardless where you land theologically and where you land in terms of eschatology. And then I took you back to the ground with my friends, Andrew Kirk, Daphne Kirk of Generation to Generation, who have spent most of this past year in Israel doing solidarity tours. I had a chance to just sit down with them and just talk about what's going on. I followed that episode up with a conversation with Charlotte Korchek of Stand With Us. Stand With Us, of course, working around the world to combat anti-Semitism and to educate. Charlotte is incredible. I think one of the leading experts really in the world at understanding anti-Semitism on our college campuses. And this is a big end times matter. I mean, it is insane the amount of anti-Semitism in the world today, and especially on college campuses in the United States. So check out this conversation I had with Charlotte. And if you would like to follow more from Stand Firm Parents, check us out everywhere. Probably where you're listening to this podcast right now. You can find out more at standfirmministries.com. Here's my conversation with Charlotte.
First of all, it has to be said, we are facing anti-Semitism in a way that we have never faced it before in the history of the world. And I know that sounds really intense, so let me explain. You know, throughout history, there's always been anti-Semitism, and it's always been constant. That being said, it has appeared in different places at different times in different ways. This is the first time that it is global. It is everywhere. It's manifesting all at the same time and in a very similar way everywhere. And that's not something the Jews have ever experienced. Now, there's a fear in that. And in that, wow, that's just a massive scale to think about. And there's also, interestingly enough, a comfort in that. That when you talk to Jews anywhere in the world, we all understand what the other one's going through. And I know that might sound crazy, but there is this comfort in knowing that you're not alone in what you're feeling and what you're experiencing. And it's not unique to your community, but it is being felt across the Jewish community, across the world. So that's number one. It manifests differently, though, to a certain extent, at least in terms of the actors. So in Europe, what they're facing a lot more of is Islamic anti-Semitism. In the UK, they're facing a lot of Islamic anti-Semitism. And in other parts, I'm going to say Germany, but we should know that the Germans have actually been one of the better ones in terms of dealing with anti-Semitism. Yeah. But France is a big one. And then when you jump to America, it's not so much Islamic anti-Semitism. It's two other types. It's far-right-wing anti-Semitism, which far-right-wing anti-Semitism is easier to deal with in the sense that far right-wing anti-Semites are openly anti-Semitic and they're almost proud of it. And the reason that they're proud of it is because for them, they see Jews as a cancer. And so they think that they're doing the world a favor by getting rid of the Jews. And so there's no reason for them to be ashamed of their anti-Semitism because they genuinely think that they're, again, doing something positive for the world. Whereas left-wing anti-Semitism has always been veiled. It's always, we don't hate the Jews. We just hate fill in the blank, right? When it was Christian persecution in Europe, it was back in the, in, you know, the Middle Ages, it was, we don't hate the Jews. We just hate their religion, right? And then when it was Germany and, you know, anti-Semitism of, you know, the 19th century into the 20th century, it was, we don't hate the Jews. We just hate their race, right? And today it's, we don't hate the Jews. We just hate their nation state. We just hate Zionists. And that's dangerous because it allows other people to look at them and say, well, they're not really anti-Semitic, right? They're not against Jews. They're just against this. And because there's right-wing anti-Semitism, it makes it easy for left-wing anti-Semites to point at the right and say, those are the real anti-Semites. Look, they are vocal against the Jews. That's not our issue. And this is really where we have a big challenge, is there are some Jews who are part of the far left anti-Semitism that is manifesting as anti-Zionism. And they basically make it okay. They say to the, their presence essentially says to those left-wing anti-Semites, well, we can't be anti-Semites because there are Jews amongst us. And that's a misnomer, because throughout history, there have always been Jewish anti-Semites. Karl Marx is a Jew who expressed horrific things about Jewish people. And I would argue that his views till this day still promote anti-Semitism within the left. And he was a Jew himself. So the notion that you can't be anti-Semitic if you're a Jew is ridiculous. But because there are Jews in that space, it makes it a lot harder for us Jews to point at them and say, this is a form of anti-Semitism. That is manifesting more than any and than anywhere, it's manifesting on college campuses. And it's intellectualizing anti-Semitism. And again, by saying, no, no, it's not the Jews, it's just Israel, right? And they don't take it one step further in noting, okay, a lot of countries in this world who are doing bad things. And I wouldn't even say that Israel should be anywhere on the top of that list in terms of bad things that countries are doing. But you're not going to target a Chinese person in America for what the Chinese are doing to the Uyghurs. You just don't. You don't, you know, start screaming at a Chinese person on the street about what the Chinese government is doing. And yet, for some reason, they can't see that that's exactly what they're doing to Jews when it comes to the state of Israel. And so it's this veiled anti-Semitism. And that makes it easier for them to get away with it. And it makes it easier for a university administration to say, well, we can't do anything about this. They have every right to be against the state of Israel. And the other piece of it is there might be people who genuinely would say, well, I don't really have any problem with Jews. It's not the Jews that are my issue. It is the Jewish state. There's two issues here. One, if you don't have a problem with Jews, I would take it one step further. I would say, do you actually care about Jews? Do you care about Jews being safe in this world? Because if you do, well, then you have to explain to me how you could be against and fight against and work to destroy the one place in this world that no matter what will make sure that Jews stay safe in this world. So again, you might be the one to say, I have nothing against Jews. But if you get your way, and Israel no longer exists, you might not be the one to kill Jews. But are you going to stand between the Jew and the person who is going to kill them? Not. And if you don't care about that, well, then I'm going to say you might not be an active anti-Semite, but you're definitely passively anti-Semitic, or at least you just don't care at all about Jews, which you might not call anti-Semitism, but you're aiding and abetting anti-Semitism. And people don't draw those lines. They don't understand how one connects to the other, because they don't understand the history of the Jewish people. And they don't understand that in our history, when we didn't have a safe haven, when we didn't have a place to go, it was open season on the Jews, and we were defenseless. And the worst part is that the majority weren't the ones who were the perpetrators of anti-Semitism and attacks against Jews. It was a minority, but the majority sat back and watched it happen. Our saying to me is I don't hate you, but I don't care enough about you to worry about your protection. And that's very scary, because it's almost like left-wing anti-Semites are ultimately going to aid the right-wing anti-Semites in enabling them to be able to kill me without me having any protection. And they're back and say, it's not my fault. I'm not the one killing the Jews. So it's incredibly dangerous what's happening. And that's why we're actively working to try to get a definition of anti-Semitism out there into the world that explains these kind of manifestations of anti-Semitism. And that's the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism. I know that's a mouthful, IHRA. It's worth looking up. It's worth investigating, because the first step to combating anti-Semitism is being able to define it and identify it. And that today is probably our biggest challenge.
Charlotte, thank you for peeling back the layers of anti-Semitism in the world right now. It seems like it could be straightforward, but it's not. It's complex and it's coming from every angle. Now, this podcast is aimed towards Christian parents. I didn't ask this ahead of time. I didn't put this in the notes, but I know you can handle it. Okay, you mentioned anti-Semitism coming from the right side, coming from the right wing. And I think when we hear that, we tend to jump to white supremacist type thoughts. And I know that's part of what you mean, but it can also come from Christianity, right?
There's definitely still anti-Semitism within certain Christian spaces. There's also been a huge progress made in so many Christian spaces when it comes to protecting the Jewish people and standing up for the Jewish people. And so I think there's a few things I want to mention. First of all, if you're listening to this podcast and you find yourself on the right, the most powerful thing you can do is call out anti-Semitism to the right of you, right? On your right. Sometimes right-wingers will call out anti-Semitism on the left, right? We love calling out the Squad,
yes,
and the far-left progressives. And then left-wingers have a tendency to call out the far-right and, you know, the white supremacists, the people in Charlottesville. And the problem is when you do that and you only call out the other side, you're not actually fighting anti-Semitism. You're weaponizing anti-Semitism against your political adversary. And that's not helping the Jews. That's just using the Jews. It's not productive at all. So first of all, I would say when you see anti-Semitism within your space, that's the most important place to call it out. And your voice will be more powerful and more impactful in that space when you call it out. The second thing I want to say is Christianity for many, many years promoted anti-Semitism. It was unfortunately going all the way back to Constantine and replacement theology, you know, which still, again, exists in certain Christian spaces. And obviously Christians should work to get rid of those sentiments within those spaces. I told a story yesterday that I'd love to share. I had a colleague who was a Christian in the UK. And the first time I met him, he wasn't my colleague yet. He was one of our students. And he had joined a leadership program. And it was very early on in the program. And I happened to be in London during one of their convenings. And they were all sitting in a circle and going around explaining why they're in the program. And he starts speaking. He's a Christian kid from Exeter University. And he said, you know, the reason that I joined this program is because I'm a Christian. And I was watching Jews on my campus be attacked for being Zionist, for being Jewish. And I thought to myself, the one thing that I could do right now is I could put myself between the attackers and the Jew who's being attacked. And I am significantly less likely to be attacked as a white Christian male. And to me, that is it. I mean, this was 7 years ago, and I still remember it like it was yesterday, because I sat there and I almost started crying. That's all Jews have ever wanted. It's you see that we can defend ourselves today, but it becomes a lot easier when we know that there's other people out there who are willing to stand with us and defend us as well. And again, stand between us and our attackers, which is something we never had in the past. And I think Christian values would absolutely, and that's what he said. He said, it's because of my Christian values and my Christian upbringing that I felt compelled to be a part of this program and to stand up for the Jewish people on my campus, because that's what a Christian should do based on our Christian value. One more thing, sorry. I'm at a student conference right now that Stand With Us is holding for all of our, for fellows that applied for a fellowship to, again, fight anti-Semitism and educate about Israel. And we have a Christian fellowship. It's a part of the broader fellowship, but it's specifically for Christians. And you know, everyone in the room are Zionists. We're all Zionists. We all love Israel. We all support Israel. But I watch how the Jewish students see the Christian students, and you just see how there's like such appreciation. Like somebody mentions the Christians in the room and the non-Jews who are here to support us. And there's just an outpouring of love because Jews feel so alone in the world right now. We just, after October 7th, after the worst massacre of Jews since the Holocaust, for anti-Semitism to rise, it's unfathomable to so many Jews. And so many Jews have lost friends, not who were killed on October 7th, but have lost friends who have abandoned them since October 7th, which the opposite should be happening. And so again, to anyone listening, if you know Jewish people, if you ever encounter Jewish people, and even if not, talk about this, but if you do know Jewish people, tell them, speak to them, because we need to hear that right now. We need to know that we're not alone. There are 15 million Jews in this world. There are 2 billion Christians in this world. And if Christians stood by us, it's huge comfort for the Jewish people to know that we have that kind of support, because we will always be outnumbered. And that's always been our challenge throughout all of history. We've always been a minority, and a tiny minority at that. And we were never able to do it alone. And still to this day, as much as we have Israel, maybe we could do it alone, but we don't want to. And we know that there are good people out there. And so if you feel it, say it out loud, show it, because Jews so desperately need to hear that and to feel that comfort right now and to know that we're not alone in this world. I mean, we asked it in the beginning of the conference, in the opening, somebody said, how many of us, you know, have lost friends in the last 9 months? And the vast majority of the people in the room were raising their hands. And I had a student come up to me yesterday. She's left-wing progressive. And she said, this has been my life, my whole life. And literally, I have no friends left. Like, they have all abandoned me. And she said, half of them are Jewish and they've abandoned me. They have turned anti, they are anti-Israel, basically anti-Semitic. And she's like, I have nobody. Like, I'm rebuilding a community now because maybe that's, I didn't know that that wasn't well known. And I'm so in my like bubble, but so many Jews are just wondering, like, where are my friends? Like, I marched alongside them, you know, to fight for, you know, BLM and to fight for other people's rights. And when it came to me and wanting people to come and march with me against anti-Semitism, they were nowhere to be found. So yeah, we've lost a lot and our community got much smaller, we feel.
That sounds so counterintuitive. Just absolutely blows my mind. So you've mentioned several times the younger generation, college campuses. Why is this? Why is there so much anti-Semitism on our college campuses? Why is it taking such a hold on the younger generation?
I have two words that come together. TikTok. Unfortunately, there's a few things about a younger generation. You know, young people are the most likely to be very quickly reactive to their emotions and to emotional appeals. And that means that Hamas propaganda feeds right into that. And they are also a generation of people who don't necessarily dive deep and do a lot of research. They watch a video and they make up their mind. And then you have a campus environment, and it depends on the campus, but a campus environment that has leaned more and more to the left over the last 50 years. Now, we should have different voices on campus. There should be left and right, but there's always been a disproportionate amount of left-wing professors to right-wing professors. If you go back 40 years, it was 1-4. Now it's like 1-20. That doesn't mean, I'm not saying the left shouldn't be there, but when you don't have that balance, right, it can create more and more extremism and more confirmation bias and that echo chamber. And that happens on campuses and that happens then online. And so there's nothing that this college student has to break them out of that thought process. And then it just gets reinforced. And then in this polarized political climate, removing even the Jews or Israel as a category, we shifted about 10 years ago to a world where it wasn't, when somebody was on the other side of the political spectrum, it's not just that they disagreed with me, right? Or had different values than me. It became they're evil. You know, I'm right and they're evil. If you don't agree with me, you're evil. And that is such a dangerous way to look at the world and to look at people who disagree with you. And so it's gone to the point now where you can demonize one community so much that they won't even listen to you, right? So Zionism and a Zionist has become a word that almost is people would equate to the word Nazi. And it's like, well, I would never dialogue with a Nazi. I would never sit down and listen to the Nazi's perspective. So when we say, can you just hear us out, right? When our Jewish students and our Zionist students on campus are just trying to have this conversation, they'll say, well, you're a Zionist. I'm not going to listen to you. I don't listen to Zionists. Zionists are evil, right? And so there's no conversation, because that notion of critical thinking, right, of analyzing something in depth has really been lost on a lot of college campuses. And professors teach their opinions and they don't encourage dissent or disagreement. And that's a very dangerous environment. And so I'm not surprised that that is a hotbed of anti-Semitism, given all of those factors. And at the same time, with being in a place of academia, there's the ability to intellectualize everything, right? The men who sat around the table at the Wannsee conference, right? The conference where the Nazi leadership decided on the final solution and how they were going to gas the Jews into non-existence. Every single one of them, I'm pretty sure, had a PhD or a doctorate of some kind, were very, very educated individuals. And you would think, well, the more educated you are, the less prejudice you'll be. But actually, sometimes the more educated you are, the more you're able to intellectualize your hatred. And that, I think, is absolutely happening on college campuses, where you have professors intellectualizing their hatred or their negative feelings towards Zionists, and therefore that's translating into Jews, and they're passing that on to the next generation, who then are able to intellectualize away their own anti-Semitism and say, it's not anti-Semitism. I'm just against Israel. I'm just against Zionists. And so it shouldn't be surprising that college campuses are the place where this is happening, given the current climate taking place politically and what has happened to the college campus in America over the last 20 years.
Hearing about the reality of anti-Semitism, it's unbelievable to me. In what you just described, it's just really unbelievable. But for those listening, watching, who have, you've captured our hearts, we want to learn more. We want to stand with Israel.
First of all, I mean, that's huge. They need to know a lot. All right. First, they need to know a lot. I think the foundation is, first of all, why? I want to quote Simon Sinek, and everyone should pick up his book, Start With Why, or at least watch his little TED Talk on Start With Why. You know, people are drawn not to necessarily what you do or how you do it, but why you do it. And so first, I think it starts with you imparting on your children why. Why is this important to you, right?
Yes.
Why? And say to your kids, this is important to me because these are our values as Christians, right? This is what we learn from the Bible, right? And that's why we do this, right? That's why we stand up. And I think there are no better people than the Kirks and I mean, when they talk about it, it just brings me to tears, understanding why they do the work that they do. And it's not, you know, I was speaking to them recently and I said, you know, a lot of times Christians will quote to me Genesis, you know, if you bless them, you will be blessed. And if you curse them, you will be cursed. And the Kirk said, we don't like that because that's still about us. Like gave me, again, it also gave me goosebumps because it goes so much deeper that, again, it's well beyond just, it's not about us. And so first start with why. Why do we do this, right? And then it can't just be blind support. It's we do this. This is why. But also Israel manifests those values, right? The actions of Israel are based on the same values that we uphold, right?
Yeah.
And that's why we can stand by Israel, right? And then really, I have to say, so much of it is education. You know, it's teaching your kids about anti-Semitism and not just about the Holocaust. It's the whole history. It's going well before the Holocaust. It's explaining. And yeah, maybe at the right age, obviously, talking about where Christianity played a role in anti-Semitism in the past and also the mea culpa and how much has been done within the Christian community to repair that. But then also how it's manifesting today, because again, to be able to tackle something, you have to be able to understand it. And then also understanding Israel better, right? And so it's slowly teaching and learning about the history of Israel, how it came to be, and really understanding, again, the values of the country, why it's done what it's done, and to be able to go and explain what it's done. And that doesn't mean defending every action of Israel. I don't defend every action of Israel. I defend the existence of Israel, and I defend Israel's right to defend itself. And even there, I'll still say, but we need to maintain our morality when we are defending ourselves. And we need to stick to our values when we are doing those things. So there's so much to learn. But again, I would start with the why. And then slowly, we just have to educate, right? Pick up a book like Barry Weiss's book, How to Fight Anti-Semitism, right? It goes through the history. It explains. And then at the end, it's pages upon pages of what we can do today to fight. And if you chose to, you know, sit down, read that book, you're having dinner, we're going to read a few pages. And you slowly have that conversation where it's not just about how we feel, but it's also real raw education so that we can understand it better. And then we can help other people understand it as well. There are only 15 million Jews in the world. So we can't affect the algorithm, if you will. There's not enough of us. And that's where I would cry out to people who are listening to this podcast and others who are part of this, who do support Israel and do support the Jewish people, to use their voices. Because the more of us there are on those platforms, the more we can affect the algorithm. Look, with TikTok, it's a much bigger challenge. This platform is controlled by the Chinese government, who are not democratic. They're not freedom loving. They're not about freedom of ideas and freedom of thought. And there is evidence to show that they manipulate the algorithm and that they suppress certain messages that are on their platform and elevate certain messages that obviously would benefit China and the broader Chinese axis that exists in the world, which is, I'm sorry to say it, but it's North Korea, China, Iran, and Russia. And if you don't see it, I mean, just take a quick look and it's pretty obvious. And so it's very scary to know that, I mean, this is a battle of disinformation that is so unique today. And we're just trying to figure out how to deal with it and legislate maybe against it. And so, you know, Congress is trying to ban TikTok and people are like, freedom of speech. And it's like, yes, but when you have a foreign enemy trying to infiltrate into the minds of your youth, right? And what we have now are our young people going to Washington and tearing down the American flag and burning it. Well, then, and that is bad in and of itself. I mean, I love that I live in a country where I have the freedom to burn the flag, to be honest with you. I'm a believer of that. I think we should make sure that nobody ever wants to burn the flag. Exactly. But I do believe that's the effort, not banning flag burning, but the effort to ensure that no one would ever want to ever burn our flag. And that's already bad in and of itself. But then they go and they raise the Palestinian flag in its place. That's terrifying. And I mean, I would never, I'm a patriot through and through, but I'm also a Zionist through and through, but I would never in the United States ever think to raise the Israeli flag in place of the American flag. Those flags would fly side by side with the American flag higher, because I have respect when I am in this country. And if I'm in Israel, my flag is going to fly higher and your flag is going to be right there below it. But they'll fly side by side. And so yes, we can use social media, but we also have to understand the limitations given the foreign adversaries and their control over some of these platforms. And so yes, we should be on them. We should try to put out as much information as we can, and we need to do it well. We need to make sure that it's factual. We need to make sure that it's accurate. But I'm such a firm believer in free speech, and I am very against censorship of any kind. I am such a firm believer that more speech is better than less speech. Somebody says something you hate, guess what? You get to say everything you want against what they said and back and forth. And that is the power that we have. And every one of us has that power in our pockets every single day to spread those messages to the people that are around us. And, you know, for us Jews, most of our circles are other Jews. So we're almost preaching to the choir. Whereas the people who are listening to this podcast, I'm assuming, have probably a much wider following that are not just a bunch of Jewish people who already know these things. And if you can use your platform and your voice to help people understand anti-Semitism and how it's manifesting today, help them understand what's going on in Israel, tell the stories of October 7th so people can truly understand what Israel is defending themselves from at this moment. That it's essential for us to be able to change the conversation and to take back the narrative and to make sure that they're that good, honest people out there, because I always teach my students, the average person's not walking around hating Jews. They're just not. I know it feels that way sometimes, given what we're experiencing. The average person doesn't care, but the average person is a good person. And if you told them what we were facing as a community and you told them how they could help, they probably would. We just have to give them that opportunity.
I told you, you'd be blown away. I also said there's probably no way this episode stays in our single commute-friendly time frame, but I didn't want to stop Charlotte once she got going. I know you're going to check out Stand With Us, their website. You're going to follow them. You're going to follow Charlotte. Why not, while you're at it, subscribe to Stand From Parents and share. Follow us as we continue to walk alongside you to help our families have a faith that lasts. Charlotte, thank you for peeling back the layers of anti-Semitism in the world right now.
Thank you so much, Jake. I really appreciate it. And again, this reminds me every day that we aren't alone. And I just hope more Jews see this and hear this so that they also know that we're not alone. And I'll make sure to tell them. So I want to thank all of you who are listening from the bottom of my heart for any support and any love that you can give to the Jewish people and to help us fight this fight, because man, we need your help. So thank you so much for giving me the time. And I hope this isn't the last time that we get to speak.
Thanks for listening to Bible Prophecy Daily. We hope you learned something valuable today. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss an episode.